Gopher Legislative Advisory Board was created by Executive Order 2020-06. That order is publicly available on Governor Sununu's website. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the board, is open to the public, and will be run in a manner compliant with New Hampshire RSA 91-A. Today's meeting, as we've mentioned, is being recorded. Should you be a speaking participant and not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect now. The recording from today's meeting will be transcribed and posted on the Gopher webpage. As I've stated, my name is Jerry Little. I am director of the Gopher office and will be facilitating today's meeting. Because the board is meeting by phone, under RSA 91-A, there are some initial logistics that we need to establish. First, each of us must state our names, where we are located, and who is with us in the room. We will do this by this opening roll call following this example. I am Jerry Little, director of the Gopher, in the Gopher office at One Eagle Square in Concord, and with me are Rhonda Hensley, Lisa English, and Nancy Smith, who are all staff members of the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery. Senate President Donna Soucy, are you with us?
Yes, I am. This is Donna Soucy. I am at my home in Manchester, and I am alone.
Thank you. House Speaker Steve Shurtleff.
Thank you, Jerry. Steve Shurtleff, I'm at my residence in Penacook, and I am alone.
Thank you, sir. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Morris.
Hi, this is Chuck Morris. I'm at my office in Atkinson, New Hampshire, and I'm alone.
House Republican Leader Dick Hinch.
Yes, this is Dick Hinch. I'm at my office in Merrimack, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Senator Lou D'Alessandro.
I'm Senator Lou D'Alessandro. I'm at my home in Manchester, and I am all alone.
Chairwoman Mary Jane Wallner.
Mary Jane Wallner. I am in my home in Concord, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Thank you. And Representative Erin Hennessy.
Good afternoon. This is Erin Hennessy. I'm at my house in Littleton, and my two minor children are with me.
Thank you very much. And I will just note for the record that Senator John Reagan did notify us that he is unable to attend today's meeting. As we move through our agenda today, each board member and anyone else speaking is asked to identify themselves before they speak. Should you choose to take any votes today, they must be done by roll call following the process we just used. Finally, before we begin today's presentations, please remember to use 5-star if you would like to ask us a question. In addition, presenters are asked to hit 5-star when their turn comes up so they can let that allows us to know to unmute your line. We last met on Wednesday, the 17th of June. There are a couple of items that you asked at that time to be added to the agenda for today, including additional funding for the University System of New Hampshire and the Community College System of New Hampshire, a discussion about the New Hampshire Hospital stipend or a proposed New Hampshire Hospital stipend, follow-up on the summer camp conversation we had last week, and then we did have some requests after the meeting for an update on the nonprofit program, an update on the housing plan, and a discussion of monies for legal assistance and aid to those with rent and foreclosure needs. So that's the agenda. Hopefully everybody got an updated agenda from Rhonda within the past couple of hours, I think. If not, you might want to check your email. There should be a new agenda there with the last several items added to it. So I guess we'll start and take them in order as they appear on the agenda. A request from Senator D'Alessandro is the first one for consideration of additional funding for the University System of New Hampshire and the Community College System of New Hampshire. Senator D'Alessandro?
Thank you, Chairman Little. We discussed this early on, and we agreed at one number, but I don't think that number is enough to sustain what we want to happen at our public universities. We know that they had to refund $41.6 million based on the fact that they had to close down for the second semester. We also know that they're going to reopen in the fall and that the COVID situation has created a tremendous expense to get the place back going, and that expense has to be taken care of. It seems to me this is a way for us to help in terms of doing two things: mitigating to some extent the expense by providing funds, and also once again professing our support for the public university system and for the students of the state of New Hampshire who want to take advantage of this opportunity and want to be on campus and know full well that if you're on campus, certain things have to be done in order to make it a safe learning environment. And originally we had tossed around the number of $20 million for the university system of New Hampshire and $10 million for the community college system. We agreed on 10 and 5, and an opportunity to relook at it as we moved forward and found out, A, if they were going to reopen, and what had to be done in order to make this reopening successful. And I think we've looked at these things at the present time. And as a result, I would think that we need to put an additional $10 million in the university system and an additional 5 in the community college system of New Hampshire to make these situations safe, affordable, and accommodating to the students who want to come back. And I think there's a real desire on the part of students to return to the campus, and there's some concern, obviously. You have to create a safe environment, and that's an expensive situation. You know, another situation, we have a number of faculty members who are 60 years of age or older, and do they want to come back, and how can that be taken care of, and what about the students that want to learn virtually and don't want to come back? So all of those things presented costs that have to be taken care of in order to keep this situation viable. So I ask my colleagues to consider requesting the additional $10 million for the university system and the additional $5 million for the community college system of New Hampshire, both extremely important public operations that provide an opportunity for New Hampshire youngsters as well as others from around the country to attend very, very quality educational institutions that provide the kind of learning experience that kids enjoy. And I think that if further financial information is required, we could get in touch with the Office of the Chancellor and Catherine Provencher, who's the financial person, and she could lay out some of the costs that have to be expended in order to get this thing going again that are covert related. So with that, Chairman Little, I hope that my colleagues would support the additional $10 million for the university system, the additional $5 million for the community college system. I think the governor's been very thoughtful and in expressing his support for the public system as well as for the private system. And I think he knows, as well as my colleagues, how important education is and how important getting this thing back up on track is, and the problems that are omnipresent because of the virus. So with that, I can express my hope that my colleagues would support this recommendation and move it forward, because I think it's in the best interest of the state of New Hampshire. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator D'Alessandro. I have several questions. Speaker Shurtleff, sir.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'd second Senator D'Alessandro's motion.
Thank you. So a motion and a second, and I believe the motion is to add another $10 million to the university system and $5 million to the community college system for COVID-19-related expenses. There's a motion from Senator D'Alessandro and a second from Speaker Shurtleff. Representative Hinch, do you have a question, sir?
Yes, I do. Thank you. So I'm not suggesting that I'm not in support of this, but I thought I heard the senator indicate that he thought it was prudent, which I agree with, to have Catherine Provencher and others provide us with a roadmap of what $10 million another $10 million invested would do and what another $5 million invested would do. And I think it would be appropriate to get that information before we vote on the motion. Again, I don't want the senator or anybody else to think that I'm not in support. I just think it's prudent to have a roadmap of what $15 million would achieve.
Well, I think that's, if I could chime in a little, I think that's certainly an excellent suggestion by Representative Hinchin. And I think Catherine Preventure and Todd Leach would be more than willing to come before us and give us a full outline of how these monies would be spent. And I think that the chairman of the community college system, as well as the interim chancellor of the university of the community college system, they would be happy to do that. I think there's an imperative of, you know, timing is the key issue here. But I think that's a great recommendation by Representative Hinch, and I'm sure that they both the university system and the community college system would be more than happy to come before us and lay out the plan for the spending of this money and its relevance, and that activity's got to begin pretty quickly, because the schedule for the beginning of the semester will be in August, and things have got to get going in order to be prepared for that. But I appreciate Representative Hinch's suggestion, and I'm sure that, as I said, the university system and the community college system would be available to give us detail as to how that money would be spent.
Senator Morse, do you have a question, sir?
Actually, it's two-part. I'll start with the question, and then I have a comment, which I assume everybody got the same sheet I got. But anyway, the question is, where do we stand in the $1.2 billion right now?
Jerry, I can hear you, Senator. I was just looking for a sheet of paper. Of the $1.2 billion, we've allocated $938 million, or roughly 75%. We have about $312 million, a little bit less than that, or 25%, that is unallocated at the moment. My recollection is that the concept would be to hold on to about $200 million in reserve to third or fourth quarter of this year to see whether or not there was a coronavirus spike and whether or not there would be other needs to ways that we would want to focus some of that money to respond to that towards the end of the year. So just to recap that quickly, you've got $938 million allocated, roughly 75%, $311 or 25% not yet allocated, but that amount does include the $200 million that we have general agreement with the LAB, the Stakeholders Advisory Board, and the Governor's Office that should be held in advance, leaving about $111 million left to appropriate.
Okay, and then I received a document from Todd Leach, which I didn't think I was the only one that I was sent to, but maybe I'm wrong there. But it's a FY21 operating budget, cost, revenue loss, and it's got one-time expenses on it. It's broken out into different sections, but in total, they're claiming $81 million in one-time financial impact. They've certainly got it broken out in different sections. I mean, I don't think anyone is looking at revenue loss in any of the industries right now, as much as they're looking at the actual expenses. The actual expenses on this document are like sanitizer, testing, cleaning, utilities, facility modifications, I don't know why you'd have contingency, but that totals $38 million. But I would guess this is what they do in a presentation to us. It looks like it's been written for a presentation, to be honest with you.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Speaker, question?
Just a comment, Jerry. Like Senator D'Alessandro, I too agree with Leader Hinch's comments, and I would withdraw my second.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments about additional funding, the proposal for an additional $10 million to the university system, additional $5 million to the community college system? But I believe the position now is that the second has been withdrawn, pending a conversation with the leadership of both schools regarding their COVID-19 need. Any further comment or question?
If I could chip a little, I think it's appropriate that they come before us. I think Senator Morse has pointed out that the system is indeed prepared to do that. They have the numbers ready. I hope the community college falls in the same category, and I would hope that they come before us and state their case. I could tell you that situations involving enrollment are contingent on a couple of things, and one is that the students come back to a safe and secure environment, and that the learning experience, if it's actually done and remotely done, should be of the highest quality available, and that requires substantial change, and I think the university and the community college can point that out. It's a worthy use of an additional $10 million for the university and additional $5 million for the community college system. But they should come before the Gopher Committee and certainly speak for their case and give us all of the documentation, answer all of the questions that are needed in order for a positive vote to be taken supporting this situation. I think it's an imperative. You know, kids are planning on coming back to school, and I think the one thing that they have to be assured of is that they will be entering a safe, secure environment as it relates to the COVID situation, and that the learning experience in the classroom, if they choose a virtual learning experience, that will be available at the same high quality level that the in-class experience generates. So, again, I hope that they come. We can schedule to come ASAP, and that a positive could be moved at that point in time. But I thank my colleagues, and I appreciate their willingness to have the people come before us, and certainly appreciate the ability of the trust of the university and the community college to come up with the details. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
President Susie, do you have a question now?
It wasn't a question. I was just going to reiterate what Senator D'Alessandro said. I agree that we should have representatives from both the university and community college in. I just hope we do so quickly because they need to make decisions very rapidly given student enrollment.
Senator Morse, do you have a question?
Well, just a comment. I mean, and I don't know if the committee wants me to read at least a portion of this that I received, because I think when they come before us, it's going to open. I should probably read this because it's got a lot of things to consider in here that I think go beyond our committee. If you don't mind, I think I probably should read it because this is as recent as yesterday, and I don't mind sharing it with everyone because it looks like it's a public document. It says, I want to share with you a list of direct one-time COVID expenses that were shared with MAC earlier today. Those direct expenses amount $38 million, not including lost revenue associated with dorm density, which adds another $10 million. The attached list also does not include approximately $10 million needed to prepare remote teaching options, which the initial $10 million, the gopher dollars, was largely absorbed by. Finally, we also had additional student aid expenses needed to support student families facing challenges with economic situation. I think that there's a couple of categories in here that go far beyond our categories that I think we deal with. I think the original $38 million when they come in is probably things that we should deal with. Beyond that, I think they're starting to step into legislative areas that are challenges that, we're going to have to take up in the legislature. Anyhow, Jerry, I'll get this document to you as soon as we get off the call today, and you can get it to everyone.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Morse. Are there any further questions about the additional money for the university system and community college system? And I'm going to work with what appears to be direction to us to have representatives from both of those systems on the phone for our next meeting. So I guess the speed with which we will hear from that will depend upon when you choose to have your next meeting, which we'll get to at the end of the agenda today. Any other questions about or comments about additional funding for USNH, CCSNH? Hearing none, seeing no hands raised on the board here, we'll move on to the next item, which is New Hampshire Hospital Stipend. I can report to you that the governor has determined that he is not going to create a new separate stipend program for all employees at the New Hampshire Hospital. Any comments or questions? See or hear any. Probably a good point to reiterate what the governor said during his press conference yesterday, which is that all stipend programs, with the exception of long-term care assistance stipend, will be ending at the end of this month as initially anticipated in his emergency orders. That one stipend program for employees at Medicaid reimbursed long-term care facilities will go until the end of July with the other the federal stipend program. The next issue is summer camp follow-up, and each of you should have received an email mid to late morning today from Rhonda Hensley with a proposal from Ken Robbins of the Summer Camp Directors Association for Financial CARES Act monies in support of summer camps. Any comments, questions? Mr. Robbins is on the phone if you would like to hear from him. Not seeing or hearing anything. Oh, question from Representative Mary Jane Waller.
Thank you, Mr. Little. I would like to hear from Mr. Robbins about him. I just barely started reading this, so I would like to hear him talk to us a little bit about the request.
Very good, Senator D'Alessandro. I see your name has a question mark beside it. Are you requesting the same, a briefing for Mr. Robbins? I will assume that's it. Ken Robbins, we're going to unmute your line. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you for the proposal that you sent to us this morning. Would you like to give us a quick overview of it?
I can certainly try. it took us a while of discussion to try and process what data we have and think about where we are going. The costs that we are looking at, the costs that camps are looking at for not operating and returning tuitions that have been collected going all the way back to really the end of last summer. I think the big realization that we are trying to help people understand is that this is 2 years with next to no revenue or no revenue for 160 camps here in New Hampshire. And I hope that that makes sense. It was not easy to map that out in a couple of short paragraphs. But a camp like mine, and I'll use my own camp as an example, we operate with a revenue that hovers around $1 million for an 8 to 10 week program that runs late June to mid to late August. All of those funds, or the majority of those funds, are collected in the late winter and through the spring. We collect deposits in the fall, we collect balances in the spring, and then we are ready to go. The deposits that we collect in the fall, they help to see us through our expenses for the winter and spring and to begin ramping up for the summer. We're also using the revenue that's left over from the previous summer to cover those costs, and those costs that run year-round, they are utility costs, payroll costs, property taxes, insurance, and the cost just to start hiring and start opening the camp for the upcoming season. So all of that revenue that has been collected for this coming summer for all of the camps that have closed is being refunded, or it has been refunded. And so what's left is nothing in terms of revenue for this year, and we will be waiting until at least the fall to begin collecting modest deposits, but really till next spring to begin collecting tuition balances for 2021, assuming that 2021 will be more favorable to open. So it's 22 months or so of no revenue, and that's where camps are looking at a very stark situation.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for Mr. Robbins? Representative Wallner?
Thank you, Mr. Little. Mr. Robbins, would you suggest that this be a fund that would be set up that camps could apply to, and each camp would lay out what their specific needs were, and if so, who would you see as being able to administer that kind of a particular, maybe like a grant program, something like what Main Street was, or like the child care program is, and would you limit it to just residential camps, or would it be inclusive of day camps?
Thank you for that question. Taking the last part of that question first, I would you would have to include day camps. Half of the day camps, I believe, half of the day camps in the state are closed. The other half that are still trying to open will be doing so at diminished populations and added expense. But for those that are closed, they're looking at really the exact same scenarios that residential camps are. So I do believe it should be inclusive of all of the youth recreation camps in the state. I do see a process where camps apply, and in much the same way as the Main Street Relief Fund or the other funds ask, to spell out what is the revenue loss, what is the impact, what is the nature of the impact, and what is the need. As to who could administer that, I had not considered that question. I'm not sure I don't have an answer off the top of my head, though I certainly think that the New Hampshire Camp Directors Board, which is made up of 20 directors of camps throughout the state, probably could put together some thoughts on that very quickly. And if I could add, one of the things we wanted to point out in the memo was that camps' access to other funding sources that were set up by the Gopher office is varied. Some camps, yes, were able to apply. Some camps were actually instructed not to. And other camps simply didn't have the opportunity because their expectation was that they would be able to open all the way up through the point, up to and past the point of guidelines being issued, and beyond that point concluded that no, they could not. At that point, the Main Street Relief Fund, I believe, had already closed, and those funds don't fully address camps' needs based on the unique impact. And so I think an application process for camps would want to take into account, was their funding received through other sources, in which case, whatever that was should be stripped away from whatever this fund might see their added need to be.
Thank you. I do have a follow-up, if it's okay. Were any of the nonprofit camps eligible to apply through the nonprofit program?
Yes, I do believe that some are. In that scenario, and actually the deadline for that is tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I'm still working on my own application for that. I'm working on that with a few different people assisting me. We're having it's challenging for us to fit our operation into that application process and understand exactly how to calculate the impact based on the questions that are being asked. I think we will be able to submit an application, but I'm not sure that we'll feel like it that it's exactly the right fit, just because of that extremely seasonal nature of our revenue and expense cycle.
Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Robbins? Okay, Speaker
Sherwood. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Roberts, for being back with us again. I've got to admit, I've been kind of bouncing from one meeting to another, and I haven't read your proposal. What were you looking for a dollar amount, if any, to go into this fund?
Thank you, sir. I think what we aimed to do was to explain the impact and explain what the loss is, and when we totaled that up, we made some very general assumptions based on what data we were able to collect quickly, but across all 160 camps, we feel like it's a safe estimate and perhaps even slightly conservative that the lost revenue will total around $146 million. And as far as expenses, camps have kind of a limited ability to reduce their expenses when they don't operate, because so many of those expenses are they're set. And in particular, for some of those camps that worked right up until into June, which is most of them, trying to open, they hired staff, they lined up vendors, they had their systems up and running, to ultimately hit the wall and realize that this can't be done, not this year, leaves them with the vast majority of their expenses as sunk. So $146 million is an enormous number, and that's not an ask. We tried to look at the way that, as the Main Street Relief Fund has done their allocation, and we heard or it was reported that approximately 17% of anticipated losses were being covered. Our thought was, right, that's for impact in and around the second quarter. Our impact is not second quarter limited. It's all four quarters of the year. When we just sort of took that 17% and applied it to what we saw as this $146 million revenue loss, that multiplied out to somewhere just short of $100 million. I think that, too, is not the ask. It's just letting you know what the impact is and where our shortfall is going to be. We understand that some, perhaps many of our camps were able to tap into some amount of funding through whether it was the Main Street Relief Fund or it ends up being the Nonprofit Economic Relief Fund. We certainly are not interested in trying to double dip or take advantage of both side by each. We're just looking to make sure that the impact is recognized as being very different. I'm sorry that if that doesn't answer that question.
No, that helps a lot. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Further questions for Mr. Robbins? And while you're thinking of, I'll just add in that there are some summer camps in the Main Street Relief Fund. We know that applications have been put into the nonprofit fund as well from summer camps. The reference to funds that they were asked not to participate to, I believe, was there was an application or two that went into the child care support fund, and they were recommended to go to the nonprofit fund instead. So there are other opportunities out there, is my point, I believe.
Yes, sir. Is it okay to respond to that with just a comment?
Certainly.
Yeah. The challenge with the child care fund, and I'm thinking, I have in my mind one day camp that is a for-profit day camp. So it's a private for-profit day camp. They cannot apply to the Nonprofit Economic Relief Fund. They were guided away from the Main Street Relief Fund because they fall under child care. Although they are not child care, we license all youth recreation camps licensed through a sub-division or sub-department of the child care licensing unit of DHHS. But when they got to the child care fund, that fund was specifically – I believe you had to open. You had to open and be serving children no later than early September, I believe. And so that would not have addressed any camp that felt they could not open this summer. And it just was confusing at that point as to where should we fit ourselves in. I think camps are somewhat like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole with some of these opportunities is our point. And while some camps definitely have, and that's great, we're concerned for those camps that either felt like they couldn't or genuinely could not.
Further questions or comments about summer camps? All right, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Robbins. You're always welcome to listen to the balance of the call if you would like. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is a nonprofit update. I will tell you that there's been an awful lot of activity in the past week and a half as we worked on some grant-related language. Nancy Smith, General Counsel for the Gopher Office, has been leading that effort for us, and she has an update for you.
Good afternoon. This is Nancy Smith. And so for an update on where the group of partners administering the nonprofit fund reports that they are as far as applications, they indicated they had over 1,000 people participating in the webinars and information sessions that they had at the beginning. They have indicated that they have done a significant amount of outreach and one-on-one counseling. The numbers that they have told us, they had over 200 requests for technical help with the application, 300 emails asking questions about it. They've had over 100 one-on-one appointments, and they have 510 applications.
Okay.
We were just having a bit of confusion with the mute button. So they've got a lot of things in progress. They indicated that, as with most types of applications, an awful lot of applicants wait till the very last day to finish the application. So they're anticipating that tomorrow will be a very busy day. But the application period does close tomorrow. So that's the update on where they are in the application process. As the director indicated, the ultimate grant agreement that the nonprofits will enter into will be directly with Gopher. So that's a document that we have developed. The Nonprofit Foundation has raised some questions about it. We're still working on that with them. To do what we can to make it as easy as possible while still maintaining compliance with our funding source and with the state's requirements that go into grants. So we're working through a few remaining issues on what the grant agreement that we would enter into with the nonprofits will look like.
Questions for Nancy? Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. The next item on the agenda is an update on the housing plans. Lisa English from the Gopher Office is here to tell us about that.
Thank you, Director Little. So the New Hampshire Housing Relief Program is designed to keep people from losing their housing and to secure or maintain permanent housing. The governor allocated $35 million for this program to support families or individuals and $20 million to be initially expended, with $15 million being held in reserve, depending on what the need and use of this funding will be. DHHS is working with the Community Action Program agencies to set up this program, and you can find information on our website, but also on capnh.org, capnh.org. There you'll see that there are two parts to this program, the one-time assistance grants that can be used to assist households with past due rent, housing-related expenses, or one-time expenses that, if not paid, impact the ability to maintain housing. And this program is really meant for people that just need a little bit of help but otherwise aren't able to maintain their housing. There is also a short-term rental assistance as part of this program as well. And all of these, if there is a need, that need has to be linked to COVID-19. So again, if you look at capnh.org, there's more information, and the I believe the application goes live on June 30th. And we'll make sure to update the links on our website as well so that you can go to Gopher to find this information.
Perfect. Thank you. Any questions for Nancy about that housing plan? And if there aren't, I'm going to ask her to keep on going, because I think the next item on the agenda, monies to legal assistance to aid with rent and foreclosure needs.
I think that was a request for a discussion.
Oh, was that a request from Senator D'Alessandro, I believe, for a new issue? I'm sorry, Nancy. Lisa, I'm sorry. Boy. This is Wednesday, right? Thank you. Senator Dedale, are there any questions about the housing plans for Lisa? If not, Senator D'Alessandro, I believe you requested a new item, monies to legal assistance to aid those with rent and foreclosure needs.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Chairman Little. I think you really could incorporate that in the housing plan, because I think that there's a definite synergistic relationship there. These renters and some homeowners will need some assistance with regard to foreclosure, and I think legal assistance is in a position to help them. Now, we know that particularly in the area that I represent, there are a number of renters, and rent because of the median family income, because of the job losses, and because of the pressure that's on the family. I think we need to provide these people with some legal assistance, and legal assistance is the place to do it. Now, as to the amount of money, I would think that we should be thinking about something like between $300,000 and $400,000 to cover that particular segment of help that people will need, because the situation that exists today expires, I think, at the end of the month, where there was a moratorium on rent payments and a moratorium on your other household delinquency. So this is something that I think is important, and these renters are going to need help. It's going to have to come from someplace, and to me, legal assistance is the place to go, because that's the area that has represented these people in the past and has done it well. I think that there will be a real surge as time moves on with regard to this particular situation. I know that I've received calls from renters who are concerned. I've tried to work out arrangements with the people who own the buildings, and have been met with some success, but that's going to be a problem, and that's why I propose that we do something about it. And one of the mechanisms that I'm suggesting is legal assistance, because the housing area is their area of specialization. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and happy to address any questions or comments that people have with regard to this subject.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions or comments relative to Senator D'Alessandro's suggestion of monies for New Hampshire Legal Assistance to assist renters and others facing housing matters.
Chief Little, do I need to make a motion that we allocate monies for this, and these monies could come out of the housing relief plan, the relief program?
And if you would like to make a motion, you could certainly do that. And we do have numerous questions now that have just queued up. So,
I would move that we set aside between $300,000 and $400,000 for the purpose of defending the renters and homeowners as as the situation develops, and that money be allocated to legal assistance.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Representative Mary Jane Wallner.
Thank you, Mr. Little. I will second Senator D'Alessandro's motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Next in the queue in order was Senate President Donna Soucy.
I was going to do the same, and Representative Wallner beat me to it.
Very well, thank you. Representative Hinch, sir.
Thank you, Jerry. So here, once again, I'm not suggesting that I'm not in favor of doing this, but I think that, with all due respect to Senator Liu, I think, he came up with a number, but I think it would be better served if we have someone from legal assistance come to us and tell us what does $300,000 to $400,000 do. I don't know if that number is too low or too high, but to just set aside money without having an actionable plan at this time doesn't make sense to me. Again, I don't want anybody to misunderstand. I may be in favor of this, but I think we need to have someone come and tell us exactly what the needs are and what does $300,000 or $400,000 do for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hinch. Further questions or comments?
Well, as was the case with the university and the college, I don't have any problem with having legal assistance come before us. The problem is intensifying because the moratorium disappears very shortly. And there are renters who are going to need some assistance. There are homeowners who are going to need some assistance. As to the number, I think he makes a valid point. How much money do they think they'll need? So if they could come before us and make a presentation, I think that would be wonderful. I know of the need. I brought the need forward because I see a problem that's on the horizon, and I want to deal with it. But I certainly appreciate what my colleague is saying, and hopefully we can get someone from legal assistance to come before us and state their case. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Lou.
Representative Mary Jane Wallner.
Thank you. I did second the motion, and I will withdraw my second so that we can have someone from legal assistance come before us and talk to us about how much funding they think would be appropriate. I do want to remind people that they were before us maybe several meetings ago. They did do legal assistance did do a presentation to our committee. I don't think at that time they specified a certain funding level. But we have had a presentation from them in the past. So I will withdraw my motion so that we can have them come at hopefully our next meeting.
Very good. I believe it was on May 18th, Representative Wallner, that Sarah Matson-Dustin spoke to us on housing issues along with Dean Kristen and Melissa Marholen. So you can look at those materials up on the Gopher website. So then with the second withdrawn, I will contact Sarah Matson-Dustin and arrange for her to speak to you again about the proper amount that she sees for representation of renters and others with immediate housing needs. Any other questions or comments on this issue? Seeing none, we'll go to what looks like the last item on your agenda, which will be pretty quick, I think. It is the extension of long-term care stabilization program. As I think I mentioned already on the call today, the governor announced yesterday that that is the one stipend program that he will be extending to the end of the month of July. The others will be terminating as initially planned at the end of June. And then, while it's not on your agenda, we did receive an update from Treasury on guidance of coronavirus funds, and Nancy Smith can give us a quick, just a few minute update on the new CARES Act guidance. Nancy Smith.
Yes. Hello again, Nancy Smith. The Treasury Department did issue updated frequently asked questions this morning. We will have them forwarded out to you so you will have a paper or electronic copy. The new content really is on page 8 and 9. There's about 3 or 4 new questions and answers. The most significant one is we're very glad to see is a confirmation of what President Trump had announced about a month ago, which was that we could use the CARES Act funds for the FEMA match for state and local government. So we had actually already been doing that on the applications from the municipal and county relief program. We've been allowing the 25% FEMA match. So we're very happy to have that confirmation. The only other one that is probably really significant is just a confirmation that that in awarding relief to individuals and private businesses, just making a per capita payment to everybody is not okay, that it does require some sort of individual assessment of needs. So we have been doing that all along, but it does validate the approach that we have taken to these relief funds.
Any questions for Nancy about the updated Treasury guidance? Representative Hennessy.
Thank you. I just have a question. I think we talked about this before, but I just wanted to confirm. If a town wants to use the funds they've received to give additional stipends to town employees that work directly with the public, are they able to do that?
It depends. Certain categories of public employees that have to respond are responding directly to COVID. Public safety and public health, probably yes. But the Treasury guidance does say that across the board, hazard payments to people that have to government employees that have to keep working during the pandemic is not an allowable use of funds. So it can't be an across the board payment.
Further question, Representative Hennessy.
Yes, thank you. So just to clarify, so if somebody is working in public works or I'm not sure what another town employee would be, but if it wasn't across the board, but if it was to selected groups that interact with the public, much like police officers or firefighters, would that be eligible?
Generally speaking, I think we've said no.
Further questions?
So the only, just follow up. So the only people that are eligible are those that are already receiving it from the state of New Hampshire.
I mean, it's hard to make, just that specific of a generalization without specifics. We have said we can't predetermine these things, but following the guidance that does say that across the board, you know, hazard payments to those still working are not okay. I have to go back to that, and certainly, you know, any city or town can present their case, and we'll look at it on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you.
Any further questions, comments, issues you would like to raise and discuss? I don't see or hear any. The final issue then is your next meeting, and we will, for today's conversation, be aligning two presentations for you, one from the University System / Community College System of New Hampshire, and the other from New Hampshire Legal Assistance. Representative Hennessy, another question now.
Sorry, no, I didn't have raise my hand.
Oh, thank you. Does anyone have a thought or comments, or is there any guidance from Chairman Morris as to when you would like to recommend the group meet again? Would you like to meet in a week?
Jerry, I'm not sure my five star is working, but I pressed it. But
I'm sorry.
I think two things need to happen here. One, I think we should go to only doing this once a month, and we still have two issues open from this month. So I'm not sure what the group would be comfortable doing. Both the House and Senate are in session Monday, Tuesday, so I would assume those days are out. So if we were to come back to solve the two points we have out, say on Wednesday of next week, then I would assume we wouldn't schedule anything till the end of July, or, you know, I don't know how the calendar falls. As a matter of fact, I have a feeling it falls right in the middle of my being away. But in any case, I would think we could solve that today. Like, maybe we pick next Wednesday to solve these two issues, and then we don't come back until the end of July, and we pick the date, or the beginning of August, depending on how the group has, you know, their schedules this summer.
Jerry, this is Dick Hinch. I was going to suggest the same thing Wednesday the 1st, knowing that the Senate's in session on Monday and the House is in session on Tuesday, and makes sense to come back on the 1st.
This is Donna Soucy. I would agree that next Wednesday would probably be the most convenient time, and given the urgency of the two issues that we discussed, I don't think we want to wait too much longer. I was going to ask for an update on one additional issue, if I could, and that would probably come from the Hospital Association. I'd just like an update as to the hospital's status statewide in acquiring additional funding. I know there were questions of federal funds. There were several state potential sources of of assistance, and was hoping that we could get an update at our next meeting.
Okay. We can call Mr. Anand and ask him for that. So there'll be three items next Wednesday. And I believe Mr. Anand may be on the phone at this point in time, so hopefully he can make a note on his calendar for next Wednesday. Representative Mary Jane Walner.
Thank you. I also think that maybe we don't need any more presentation from the camps, but I think we did not really, as members, have much of a discussion about where we might go with something for New Hampshire camps. And maybe we could finish that up next week also.
Very good. And Representative Hennessy.
Director Litter, I think there must be something wrong with my hand because I haven't raised it since my last question.
I think we've had a little bit of glitching. We've had people say their hand was up and we haven't seen it, and we've seen hands pop up that apparently aren't meant to pop up, so I apologize for that. We'll blame it on the humidity today. How's that? Anyone else, any other questions from members of the Legislative Advisory Board? So we have then, I believe, four issues to arrange for at a meeting next Wednesday at 1:00. That would be additional funding for university system and community college system, monies for rental representation, monies for the New Hampshire Legal Assistance, an update from the Hospital Association regarding their ability to address additional federal funding, and a request to complete the conversation on camps. Anything else you would like added? If not, I believe Senator Morse also suggested that after that, the next meeting be the final week of July, which is the week of the 27th through the 31st. Are there any thoughts about that? So next meeting would actually be next Wednesday, July 1st, and then the meeting after that sometime the week of July 27th through 31.
Well, for Senator Morse, it would have to be the 29th or later. So
Wednesday the 29th?
Yep. I'm good then. I don't know about the rest of the group.
This is Dick Hintz. That works for me.
Yep. This is Donna Soucy. I'll make that work as well.
Yeah, Lou D'Alessandro, I'll make that work as well.
Steve Sherlock,
Mary
that's
Jane,
fine for me.
Works for me. This is Mary Jane.
Sounds pretty good then. So then next meetings will be a week from today, July 1st, 1 p.m. We'll have those four items on the agenda that we just discussed. And then the following meeting will be on Wednesday, July 29th. If you have issues you would like for that meeting, forward them to either me or Rhonda Hensley at the Gopher office. Anything else for the good of the order? Seeing no hands raised, we will adjourn at 2:09.
Thanks, sir.
2:11, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Have a good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry.